Hey, welcome into the Big Ten Huddle. I'm your host, JR. I've got a lot to talk about going on in the Big Ten, and I have got to say, I'm feeling it for Indiana tonight, Zach. I got my Indiana shirt on, all right? Listen. Kent went out, and he got himself a Luke Altmyer jersey. I'm a cheapskate, so I went out and bought an Indiana sweatshirt, you know, getting fall time and stuff like that, and I wore it on the show today. Now, I did not make the wager that Kent did. I actually don't wager in real life, so I just did this out of the goodness of my heart to support the Indiana Hoosiers in their 4-0 start. First time ever in 140 years, Zach. What did you think that this would be the greatest accomplishment you've ever seen in Indiana football history in your lifetime? I mean, what do you think?
I mean, to say Indiana 4-0, to see them score what? Over 200 points, right? In their first four games?
That's 77 helps.
Yeah. But I mean, it's a significant accomplishment for any team, even if you're playing negative competition. So I think it warrants getting that type of a shirt for 4-0.
I love it.
I'm cheaper than you. I just have my Bloomsburg shirt on. So go Central Pennsylvania college teams in Division II.
You're going to be so ready when they join the Big Ten. Conference realignment is coming from Bloomsburg.
In 21-48.
There we go.
I'll be dead and gone.
But the shirt will live on.
This is starting out well.
Yeah.
This is fine. Everything is fine.
Oh my gosh. We have so much to get to tonight, Zach. We have Nebraska, Illinois. We have, you know, the Ohio State, Penn State, Indiana dominance. Maryland, I'll throw Maryland in there with their dominance as well. We have the USC Michigan game, which was just so much fun to watch. That was such a fun game. The Iowa Minnesota game, that was another one that was fun to watch, seeing Minnesota kind of get out to a lead and then Iowa find their way back. And Caleb Johnson, we'll talk more about him when the time comes, but a lot of really good stuff. Michigan State, my heart breaks for Michigan State. That's that was a game that you thought you had. I actually, when I was doing my power rankings, I actually went ahead and put them in the spot assuming that they won, and then, you know, everything went to crap, so that happened. But man, what a weekend of football. It was a whole lot of fun. We did our power rankings episode last night. You guys can go check that out if you want to hear about our power rankings. But tonight we are going to recap every single game. Now, we're not going to spend the same amount of time on every single game, but we will touch on every single game, at least give a thought and maybe a takeaway from some of those. I have four takeaways. Zach, I want to get you your thoughts on these four takeaways from this week that I believe we now know after 4 weeks of Big Ten football. But I want you to let me know if you think you know them, and the people in the chat, I want you all to tell me, am I crazy or am I conscious? One of the two. I might be crazy. I'm wearing an Indiana shirt right now, so could be crazy. But Zach, let's start with a really, really interesting game. Probably my favorite game I got to watch this weekend was Nebraska, Illinois. Number 24, Illinois defeated number 22, Nebraska, 31-24 in overtime, improving to 4-0 for the first time since 2011. Illinois quarterback Luke Altmyer threw four touchdown passes, including the game winner to Pat Bryant in overtime. Altmyer finishes with 215 passing yards and zero interceptions. Dylan Raiola, he had a good game as well, threw for 297 yards and three TDs, but was sacked three times in their overtime possession, sealing the loss. Illinois tied the game late with a six-yard TD pass to 335-pound tackle Brandon Henderson on fourth down. Zach, if a 335-pound tackle can do it, so can you. That's my motivational quip for the day. Nebraska missed a potential game-winning 39-yard field goal with 3 minutes left in regulation. Undisciplined play hurt Nebraska, which committed nine penalties and extended its losing streak to ranked teams to 25 games. Ouch. Illinois continues its perfect red zone efficiency, now 16-for-16 on the season, and Nebraska's record 400th consecutive sellout at Memorial Stadium was spoiled in the defeat. Zach, how did Illinois manage to pull this game out?
Well, I think a couple things. One, I think Illinois was stronger in the lines than we expected. I mean, they protected Altmyer well. The line for Nebraska was the one that got worn down. their defensive line. And you look at that last overtime. Yes, Pat Bryant got the touchdown, but Caden Fagan ripped off a 21-yard run, which he had not been doing much throughout the game. But he was, you know, he had a big run at the in the overtime. Josh McCray had some significant carries. You know, they didn't necessarily go for big yardage, but I mean, he was pounding away at that defensive line. And, you know, the secondary, again, I think played, I mean, the big interception, you know, was it an interception? Was it a touchdown? But like the secondary again came to play. And Luke Altmyer, man, I've been saying since preseason, people were sleeping on him. And he is a legit quarterback in this league. And I think he showed that while Raiola, I think, has the higher ceiling, Altmyer is a legit dude right now in this conference.
Yeah, Altmyer is legit. I did ding him a little bit for that fumble late in the fourth quarter that set Nebraska up for that field goal. I mean, Nebraska would have won that game. If they had hit that field goal, they probably would have won that game. Now, obviously, Illinois still had their chance. But then after that, Altmyer was given another chance to drive down the field, just get a field goal, and he still wasn't able to do that. So I did ding Altmyer a little bit in my quarterback grades, to much of the Illinois fans' chagrin, and not really liking that. That's okay. I'm a big boy. I can take the criticism. But yeah, I mean, Phillip, he's saying it. He called it. Raiola mm-hmm. would make freshman mistakes, and Altmyer wouldn't make the mistakes. I tell you, I really thought that Nebraska just, they had the better trenches in this one, and it was going to show. But man, Illinois, they took that personal, Zach. They heard me say it. They were like, oh yeah, JR said it. Let's go after him for it. And they decided to go after the other team. Now, I do think the Nebraska defensive line was excellent a lot of the times. It was just the undisciplined penalties and errors that they made that was like, guys, are you kidding me? Like, you're literally just giving up free opportunities here. Now, you can't ding Altmyer for that. He capitalized on the mistakes, right? So we got to give Altmyer credit there. But man, Nebraska had chances to win this game.
Yeah,
they just didn't do it.
Yeah, well, and to your point, I think it's easy to maybe ding Illinois a bit and think, well, Nebraska lost it more than Illinois won. But I would counter that by saying Illinois went on the road and took advantage of the opportunities when they were there. And I don't think Nebraska was so much better from a roster standpoint. And I think that bore out, because I think Illinois stayed with them. They were resilient. They persevered. And when it was crunch time, Nebraska faded, you know, and you can't ding Raiola too much, right? It was a 3rd-and-3. I don't know how much I love that play call of going for the kill shot, knowing that you're going to try to go for a field goal. I just don't like it when you have 3rd-and-short and you go for a kill shot. I'm like,
especially when you have the running game in Nebraska, you got, it wasn't like spectacular on Friday night, but still, like, that's a really good running game. You should be able to trust that, right?
Yeah. So just, you know, get at worst 4-down territory.
Yeah.
I just hate settling for field goals to try to win games, because they're kickers. And like, we've seen it with even some of the best kickers. Sometimes they shank, and we saw that. So I just didn't like that. I understand why they did it, but when Nebraska had a chance to win, they didn't. When Illinois had a chance to win, they did. And that last overtime where they just sacked Raiola to what seemed like to the state of Indiana. It was out of the stadium at one point. Illinois stepped up and did their job.
Yeah. I can't say enough good things about Illinois after this game. They surprised me in so many ways. I knew that defensive line of Illinois was legit, and I figured if they were going to win in the trenches, that was going to be the spot that they would. But overall, and I mean, who was it? Cox, that guy that got the interception in the end zone. Holy cow. I mean, that is the kind of play that I saw him make that play, and I was like, this is Illinois' game. I truly believe this is Illinois' game. All right. John Jacobs is asking, he says, are you guys currently discussing one of the four takeaways, or are we merely going to review every game in succession? We are going to review every game, but I also have a takeaway from certain games. And my takeaway from this one, I'm glad you brought it up, John. My takeaway from this one is that Illinois is for real. Illinois is not, like, Illinois is going to finish as a ranked team in my mind this season. They are not going to finish outside of rank. That's my prediction. Stick it to it. Illinois is for real. They're not going to have a tough schedule later on in the year, and you're going to see them with four or five losses or something like that. I think this Illinois team is for real. I think they're going to end this year ranked, and I think you're going to see Illinois upset some more teams that other people are going to say, wow, I didn't see that one coming at the beginning of the year. You agree or disagree, Zach?
Agree. Absolutely. I think their floor is 8-4.
Yeah.
The one caveat to this is injuries, right? If they get injured, yeah. I don't know how good the depth is, but if Altmaier stays healthy, if the secondary stays healthy, I think they have one of the most underrated wide receiving cores in the country. Franklin and Bryant are dudes. And I wrote an article after the Kent State game, and I asked Drew Aller about this at the game. Like, how are you going to prepare for the secondary? Because this is easily the best secondary that they have faced to this point. Mm-hmm. That game is, like James Franklin said it, they need whiteout energy for next week. Like, he is on alert, and there's good reason for it, because this team, Illinois, is going to challenge Penn State, and I think Penn State's one of the top three teams in the conference, like a cut above the rest of the conference, and I still think Illinois is going to challenge him next week.
Yeah. Now, I'm not going to go put money on the game, but I saw the lines come out. The line for Illinois Penn State right now is something at like 17.5 or something like that in Penn State's favor.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. It's awful. So,
yeah. The bettors really stunk it up here. Now they're right more often than not, but man, if you're looking for a parlay or something like that, go put that one in there. Cause Illinois is going to keep this game closer than that. Illinois is not going to get blown out. So we'll do more with the game when we do our previews and stuff, but we'll leave it at that. All right, let's move on to Ohio State, Marshall. Zach, number 3, Ohio State defeats Marshall 49-14, wrapping up their non-conference schedule with a strong win. And as Danny Cannell said, they've not played anybody with a pulse. And I think Marshall had a little bit of a pulse, but go ahead.
I was just going to say, does Florida State have a pulse?
No, Florida State does not have a pulse.
And he needs to be quiet.
He didn't want to talk about that, did he?
No.
I guess they had a little bit of a pulse beating Cal. Great job. You had a team that traveled across the country and you beat them. Congrats. Quinshon Judkins had a fantastic day, rushing for 173 yards and 2 touchdowns, while Mecca Ibuka added 117 and a score. Travion Henderson with 2 touchdowns had a 40-yard breakaway run. Freshman Jeremiah Smith had another big run, 53 yards, or big catch with a run afterward, 53-yard touchdown. Marshall was competitive. I mean, in the first half, they were trailing just 28-14 at halftime. They had that catch at the back of the end zone, which I felt like the toe was out, but, you know, they gave it to him, and, you know, you can't really argue that, you know, if they said that there wasn't conclusive evidence or whatever, it wasn't the most obvious thing in the world. I felt like the toe was out, but at the end of the day, it wasn't the most obvious thing in the world. And so, I mean, Marshall, they had a good first half, and then in the second half, when Stone Earl, the quarterback, got hurt, things really went downhill from there. Ohio State's defense allowed a few long drives, but held strong as the game progressed. And despite only having possession for 23 minutes, Ohio State only had possession of the ball for 23 minutes, Ohio State averaged 10 yards per play, showcasing their offensive firepower. Zach, although the offense was great, is the Ohio State defense still one of the best in the nation after this game to you?
Yes, with a caveat. I think they were flat. I think they missed Tyleek Williams, and I just think they're very vanilla. But I think next week's going to show us the real Ohio State. And granted, they're playing Michigan State, so it's not, you know, not great, not the best competition, but Michigan State's lines are better. They have real, like, I think Nick Marsh is a dude. I think Aiden Childs, while I think he's erratic, I think he is athletic. He has immense talent. And you've got legit running backs. I mean, they're good skill position players for Marshall, but they should not have struggled as much with Marshall. I am prone to give them the benefit of the doubt, but I will say they were showing tendencies that I did not like from a year ago, particularly letting drives extend and really struggling to put away the run game. I've seen it the first 2 weeks. So like I'm willing to give them the benefit of the doubt this week, but if it extends to next week, then I am flipping my thought on it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not gonna not confident enough in it to make it my takeaway, but I feel pretty solid in the belief that Ohio State is going to struggle with running quarterbacks the rest of this season. Unless they make some philosophical changes to the defense, unless those linebackers get better, they're going to struggle whenever they face a running quarterback. And that looks really good for Michigan when they face him at the end of the year, because guess what? That's what Alex Orchie does, and we'll talk more about that game later. But at the end of the day, like, if Ohio State wants to have the best defense in the nation, they are going to have to fix that issue. They're going to have to get their linebackers better acquitted to that, and they're also going to make sure their defensive ends are getting better pressure on the quarterback. Their backup defensive end, Caden Curry, was their best pass rusher in this game.
And he got...
And he got ejected. Tossed, which it happened like super late in the second quarter. So that was good for them.
Yeah.
So that way he's not out for next game. All right. One more thought and then we got to move on, Zach.
Yeah. Just to that point, Sonny Styles, somebody has to train him to take better angles.
Yeah.
Cause he was and I think he's a great player or like a great athlete. But man, was he taking some angles that were bad.
Yeah. It was not great. From him, and I wonder how much that transition coming from the safety position is still continuing to happen. So we'll see as the year goes. But yeah, definitely a rusty start there. All right, Zach, Penn State, Kent State. You were at this one, number 10. Penn State dominates Kent State 56-0, powered by the QB Drew Aller and his 4 total touchdowns, 3 passing, 1 rushing. Penn State set a program record with 718 yards of total offense, breaking a mark that had stood since 1926. Not many offensive records from 1926 are still around, but that one was. Aller was 17 for 21 for 309 yards, connecting on 5 different receivers for touchdowns, including 59-yard bomb to Amari Evans. Penn State's defense stifled Kent State, holding them to just 67 total yards. Holy crap, 67 total yards. And forcing 10 punts. Yes, John, you are correct. This is a cupcake game. still, though. After seeing Penn State struggle against Bowling Green, Zach, do you feel like the dominance that we felt after the West Virginia game of Penn State is coming back a little bit more?
Yes. And, you know, to John's point, Kent State's, they're not just a cupcake. They're like a fluffy cupcake that you really enjoy. Like, it's very sweet. A lot of
frosting on top.
Yeah, a lot of frosting. It's more frosting, more frosting than substance. I will say...
That needs to be a new segment of the show where we relate every to a different kind of food group. Like, What's the bird that can't fly? That's mine for Michigan.
That the one that can't fly
but can run really flat, really fast. Like,
ostrich,
it's really strong, it's
ostrich,
really fast.
Flamingo,
whatever they are. Sorry, I'm getting off topic. Go.
By the way, speaking of food, the media press box food at Penn State, their press box food game is
get some nachos, chef's kiss.
Brisket, man.
Oh, nice
brisket, homemade chocolate chip cookie. It was
primo.
It was
nice
fantastic.
Job, Penn State.
It was so good. Penn State checked all the boxes for me that I had concerns of, with one very slight two slight exceptions. But the receivers, they have more receivers that can get loose down the field than before. Like Evans, Liam Clifford, Julian Fleming all had catches over 35 yards, which I think is a big deal, even against a team like Kent State, because they weren't doing that a year ago. Like Harrison Wallace did it in the first game, and then those three receivers did it in this game. The run game continues to be fantastic with Singleton and Allen. And Aller, the thing that really impresses me about Aller is how he's matured since last year, maneuvering the pocket, getting downfield. I just thought he did a really – like this team has matured, and I think that's the thing that really stood out to me. Yes, it's Kent State, but I thought the offense was much better and in much better position to play the upper echelon teams. I also think that defense, the secondary was a concern for me. They were so sticky. And the defensive line, I mean, they knocked out 2 quarterbacks in the first half. I mean, they were killing people, like almost literally. So I wrote an article about this game on the College Huddle. I'd encourage you guys to read it. And John, I see that comment. I'm just saying it matters how you blow teams out.
Well, like this is what you wanted to see, right?
Yeah.
Like, this is the step you take to what you want to see. Doesn't mean they've arrived. No, of course not.
Yeah.
We're not claiming Penn State has arrived.
Yeah,
but I think, like you're saying, like this is the step you wanted to see. You wanted to see, after a game against Bowling Green where they shouldn't have struggled as much as they did, which shout out to Texas A&M, they struggled too against Bowling Green. So, yeah. You know, it doesn't look all that bad after that. At least they didn't pull a Mississippi State and get blown out by Toledo. However, you know, at the end of the day, like, they did what they were supposed to do. Now comes the real test, right?
Yeah.
Illinois coming to your place. Illinois is hot after getting that big win against Nebraska. Penn State has been known to drop the big games every now and then. So can Illinois go in and make it happen, or is Penn State going to show that they're different this year?
Yeah. And I think that's the big question, because I think Illinois matches up well in key areas. So, like I said, the receivers are getting better, but Illinois secondary is so good. And I think on the flip side, I thought the defensive backs for Penn State played really well in this game, but can they hold up against a really good receiving core? So those are my questions.
Yeah. And I think we'll get them answered against Illinois. It's a great opponent for them to, go up against. Mark is reminding you to smash the like button. Thank you, Mark. That is something I often forget to do. And look at that. John says he just smashed it. So thank you.
Thanks, John.
Thank you for smashing the
Mark.
Like button, everybody. All right, next game, Indiana, Charlotte. Indiana Hoosiers dominated Charlotte. The 49ers lost 52-14. Indiana improves to 4-0 for the third time since 1991. Curtis Rourke passed for 258 yards, 16 for 20, threw one TD, and ran for another. Ty Sun, that's two different words, you know, Ty Sun, Lawson, scored two rushing touchdowns, gaining 35 yards on seven carries. Indiana's balanced attack had 510 total yards. Six different players scored touchdowns, continuing their explosive start of the season. Having now scored 202 points in four games, the Hoosiers broke away in the last minute of the first half with Rourke's rushing TD and a 19-yard TD pass to Keyshawn Williams, taking a 31-14 lead at halftime. Head coach Kirk Cignetti is the first coach in program history to start 4-0. We already talked about that earlier, positioning the Hoosiers just two wins away from bowl eligibility. Great start for them. Zach, after a dominant performance, should Illinois be ranked? Right now, they're receiving votes. They're 27th according to the votes, but should they be ranked?
Yes, because of how they've won. Now, I think it's ironic that they play Maryland this week, because what has Maryland done over the past several years to get notoriety? They play a bunch of cupcakes and then they get blown out by somebody. Now it's Indiana's turn. Are they for real? They got to get past Maryland to kind of at least have some credibility. And that's going to be an interesting game. But I think
Indiana used to be the cupcake.
Yeah.
Like, they used to be the team that, like, oh, we're playing Indiana, you know, get the starters out by the third quarter type of deal. There, I mean, it's one thing when you used to be the cupcake. Now you got cupcakes on their schedule. I love it.
Can we just talk about how giddy you are that we're talking Indiana?
I got my shirt on, dude.
I know, but it's...
If you missed it at the beginning, I went out and bought an Indiana shirt to commemorate Kirk Cignetti's 4-0 start. First time ever a coach has started 4-0 in Indiana. So, you know what, Zach? Yes, Indiana should be ranked, and it's dumb. These pollsters are not doing it, because guess what? ESPN FPI, which I know every single one of these pollsters look at, ESPN FPI, the resume rankings, their strength of record. You know who they have 19th, Zach? You know who they have at 19th?
Indiana.
LSU. Oh, you know LSU. They have 20th?
Indiana.
So you're telling me LSU is a top 15 team? But Indiana's not even top 25, but you got them right there next to each other because of the strength of record. LSU is 3-1. Indiana is 4-0. I know Indiana hasn't played anybody yet. They got the cupcake schedule. They've been having cake parties ever since week one. I get it. But this offense looks really, really good. That defensive line looks much better than I think some people were thinking about before. And I'm really, really excited for the Indiana fans, because I know that it's hard to get people excited at Indiana for football, but they got me excited. Now, it's not hard to get me excited about football, let's be honest, but they got me excited. And so I'm ready to roll with them. Let's go Hoosiers. I'm ready to roll.
Yeah. Well, and to be fair, they beat UCLA by a bigger margin than LSU.
There we go.
They went
transitive property. That's what we want.
Yeah. But they went on the road to beat UCLA, where UCLA traveled to LSU. Like, I'm not saying that Indiana is definitely better than LSU. I'm just saying, like, optics, Indiana's actually looked a little better than LSU.
Yeah, I agree. Dave's pointing out, he says it usually takes Indiana 4 years to score 200 points, and they're really good this year. I need to go check that stat. How many years has Indiana not even scored 200 points on the season? Because there's I guarantee it's a lot.
Okay, here's my unsolicited advice to you, JR. You should apply for media credentials for the Ohio State Indiana game.
I'll do it. I don't think I'll get it, but I'll do it. I mean, I was at Big Ten Media Days, so maybe they'll let me do it.
Yeah.
I've been up in the box before. They have good food up there. Now, it wasn't brisket level. But, you know, they have good food up there.
Ohio State's got to up its game, yeah. Apparently.
Hey, look at this. John says, Craig Sheeman, that's the host of Locked On Big Ten. He runs a great show over there. Fantastic stuff. About 56 years old, who went to Indiana, said Rourke is the best QB Indiana has ever had. I didn't hear him say that. That's really, really cool. Really cool to hear that. And then I think there was another. Oh, Blue Wolverine is here. Hello, Blue Wolverine. Appreciate you being here, man. We appreciate it. All right, Zach, we're going to hit a commercial really fast, and then we're going to come back, and we will talk about Iowa, Minnesota. Should be a fun conversation. Have you ever wanted to watch all 22 film, you know, that film the coaches watch? Well, now you can. Introducing the Coaches Film Room. Over at Minnesota Sports, former college coach Zach Smith breaks down film of the most relevant teams in college football with a bit of a Big Ten lead. It's not free, so you'll need to sign up for the Colonel tier, which is $25 a month, but I can attest to you that it is far more worth it than that. With about 4 to 8 games per week, this is worth so much more money, not to mention Zach's analysis, making you a smarter football fan. Go check it out. The links are in the description. Minnesotasports.com. You won't be sorry. Back here on the Big Ten Huddle. Thanks for sticking with us, JR and Zach Guggenheim of the Big Ten Football Podcast. We are going to talk some Iowa, Minnesota. Iowa defeated Minnesota 31-14. I know I got Gophers in the chat, so I'm sorry I have to do this to you, but we got to recap the game, all right? Reclaiming the Floyd of Rosedale trophy. I saw Iowa fans posting their bacon this morning, so they were having a good time with that. Congrats to their bacon. Iowa's Caleb Johnson ran for a career-high 206 yards and 3 touchdowns, leading a dominant second half. Minnesota led 14-7 at halftime, and the 2 touchdown passes with Max Brosmer. However, Iowa struggled offensively, gaining for 107 total yards in the first half. However, in the second half, the Hawkeyes turned it around at halftime, scoring 24 unanswered points, largely thanks to Johnson's explosive runs. Iowa's defense held Minnesota to just 79 rushing yards, a stark contrast of the past meetings. Zach, just what do you think overall? Let's start here. What do you think overall of Iowa's rushing offense? To me, this is one of my other takeaways that I'll get to. I think I think Iowa has the best rushing attack in the conference so far. Now, that's against certain competition they've been playing. I know Ohio State has looked amazing, but Ohio State's also played cupcakes. Iowa has gone out. They've played Iowa State, who is a highly ranked team too, right? This is a ranked team that they've played, and they've looked good against Iowa State. And Minnesota, they just shut 2 teams out. Like, Minnesota's a good defense. I don't want anybody to get it twisted. Minnesota's a good defense, and they held Iowa in the first half, but it just so happens Caleb Johnson's a really good running back, and that's a really good rushing attack Iowa has. So are you with me? Do you think Iowa so far has the best rushing attack in the Big Ten?
I don't know if I can go best, because I know the beasts that are in Ohio State, Michigan, Oregon, and Penn State. But I think I might say that they have the leading candidate for the Big Ten running back of the year. So I would go there
right now. Yeah.
Yeah. Like Caleb Johnson. And I think I might be able to verbally process my way there. I do think Iowa's offensive line is the best it's been in 3 years. And that is
Tim Lester has done a phenomenal job with the blocking. Like, I don't think that's get people want to talk about what he's done with the play calling and stuff like that. That's awesome too. But this blocking and the way they're scheming up their guys, the way they're pulling guys, like, you didn't see this out of Iowa last year. It is much, much better.
Iowa's going to give every team on their schedule fits, including Ohio State. I mean, that's how good it is. And Caleb Johnson, is it a stretch to say that he might hit 2,000 yards this season?
I don't think so. I mean, if he has good games against the bigger teams, I think it definitely could happen. And they don't have the toughest schedule in the world. So
yeah. I mean, he might be going to New York.
Possibly.
Yeah. So I
how crazy would that be? We rag on Iowa's offense all the time, and then we talk about Iowa possibly having a Heisman finalist running back. Like,
do you think he would thank Cade McNamara in the speech?
No, I think
that's not good. Okay.
Thank you for teaching the guys in front of me how to block. Excellent work.
You could thank Cade for not, you know, for not being able to throw so that he would have to run so much. This is not, I don't want to do that to Cade. I'm sorry. I do want to do it, but I shouldn't. I think I can be there right now, but I think Ohio State in particular is going to have a lot to say down the road.
No, for sure. That's why I say so far, right? Yeah. In 2 weeks, we're going to find out. Iowa versus Ohio State, and Iowa's on a bye week this week, I believe, so they'll get their time to figure it out and stuff, but we're going to find out who has the better rushing attack because we got two good defenses, two really good defenses. Secondary for Iowa has been a little suspect at times, but I think, they did a really good job. I mean, you hold Darius Taylor to the rushing totals that you held Minnesota to this past game, like, hats off to them. I really thought Minnesota was going to pull it out. I mean, I thought Minnesota was doing a really good job in the first half. Now, I remembered Caleb Johnson's had really good second half, so I thought, man, if they can hold Caleb Johnson, if they can hold this Iowa offense back, which, you know, that's what Iowa State did in the second half. Yep. That's what they were able to do. So if Minnesota can have this happen, we've seen it before, Minnesota come out with this win, but it just proved to be too much. And, I mean, there were some questionable calls by PJ Fleck. We had it addressed on the Power Ranking show, and I just said they kind of, Iowa just kind of dominated them, and I still think they did, but I do think that there was some questionable decision-making. Should you have gone to the run sooner? Should you have worked on that more? You know, should you have trusted Max Brosmer as much as you did? Trust me, PJ Fleck's not on the hot seat. They can't afford to fire him, all right? So he's not on the hot seat. Don't get that in your mind, but I think there are real questions about the future of PJ Fleck at Minnesota now and saying, is this the guy we want to hitch our wagon to? Is he going to be the coach at Minnesota in 2-3 years?
There's so much I want. I will say there are people already coming out on Twitter saying this is how much PJ Fleck's buyout is, which tells you how much people want him fired.
Yep. Yeah.
And
I mean, as soon as you get the buyout talk going, it's like, also you're in the Big Ten now. Like, this is not a poor conference. So yeah.
I mean, I don't blame them. Like, he hasn't, the thing that concerns me about Fleck is he hasn't changed. He hasn't grown as a coach. Like, I think that was a thing that impressed me a lot with Jim Harbaugh.
I hear you, Doc. I hear you, Dave.
Like, and I know. You know, we could talk asterisk talk all the time, but like the thing that did impress me about Jim Harbaugh was he stuck to his guns where he needed to, but he evolved throughout his coaching tenure, and he was always getting better. And I think you see that with the best coaches as they evolve, Nick Saban and, you know, Urban to an extent. PJ Fleck is just stale. Like, he has not changed anything. He seems like this. He actually seems like a caricature of himself right now. And
like he tried to change. I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt you, but like,
no, go for
I
it.
Like, he tried to change some in this game, right? Like, he tried to go with Max Brosmer and say, like, this is the guy I'm going to ride. Like, this is the veteran quarterback who can get the job done and who, you know, is going to lead this team to victory. And to be fair, in the first half, he was like,
yep,
it was going well in the first half. But I think once Iowa really, you know, took that away, you had to go back to the run more and you had to figure that out, but it never got put together. And this is kind of what PJ Fleck has been known for. Like, he can have good things happen on offense, but his in-game adjustments and trying to figure those things out, and of course some of that's on the offense coordinator as well, but it's not where it needs to be, especially for a program like Minnesota that has as high hopes as they do. Now, Minnesota could also be recruiting better as well, yeah, right? I think, yeah, they had a good class this last year, and I thought they get some good transfers. But can you do that year in and year out? You do that for a year or two, that works. But can you do that year in and year out? And I also have to say, Zach, I feel like the rotating of the offensive line that PJ Fleck was, yeah, doing earlier in the year, I felt like that caught up to him in this game as well. Like, you have to get your guys in there working together and comfortable with each other. And unfortunately, you didn't. And I think it showed in the second half.
Yeah. And to that point, I think when I say changing, I don't mean in play calling. Like, I mean, I think he needed to be more aggressive, and he was more aggressive, which was needed. I think it's more just him sticking stubbornly to how he does things. So like the rotating of the offensive line, it's like for weeks we have been criticizing him on this and he keeps doing it anyway. And it's like, see, this is what happens when you don't have continuity on the offensive line. You get bum rushed, right? Like, you can't do anything against a defensive line that has been good for Iowa, but not great. And like, that's where I'm like, I don't understand why you're doing things the way you're doing. I think development is another one where I'm like, where is the development in these players that like you see some of it, but
I was like, you saw Tyler Newbin, right? I mean, you have Coy Parrish there that I think he's going to continue to develop. I mean, he's going to be a good barometer of, you know, what you see in the development. I think Ja Joyner has, you know, developed well since he's been there. But
certain guys, yeah.
Right, but you're right. It's not like an overwhelming amount. And I don't know if Minnesota needs to be an overwhelming amount, but we see what Iowa is able to do putting players into the league. And Minnesota, I'm not saying they need to be there exactly, but they need to be known as one of those programs that can put 3 stars in the league, because recruiting services just don't take notice of some of the athletes and some of the good players they have up there at Minnesota. So we'll see. It's a tall task for PJ. I mean, I do feel for him in some ways, but at the same time, like you said, like he can't just be so stubborn that he sticks with, this is what I've always done, this is what I've always known. So he's going to have to adapt. He's going to have to improve. And I think Iowa next year, because let's face it, I don't think he's getting fired this offseason. I just don't think it's happening unless some stuff really goes bad this season. If they finish like, I don't know, 4-8 or 3-9 or something like that, I don't think anything's going to happen, but we'll see. So, all right, let's talk some Maryland Villanova. Zach, Maryland cruised to a 38-20 victory over Villanova, improving to 3-1 on the season. Wide receiver Ty Felton, he continues to show that he is one of the best wide receivers in the country. He caught 14 passes for 157 yards and a touchdown. Billy Edwards had a career-high performance, completing 28 of 32 passes for 328 yards and two touchdowns. He did have a pick in there as well, but a very solid, efficient performance from him. The Terps dominated early, scoring on their first 4 drives and leading 24-0 at halftime. However, Zach, Villanova came out, outscored Maryland in the second half, 20-14. Zach, Maryland was outscored in the second half. Are you concerned about that at all? What are your thoughts?
I mean, contextually, yes, because I don't buy Maryland. But like, if you're asking me, like, should you be concerned because they got outscored? No, I'm not super concerned. Like, I think it just shows that their second and third string is probably not in a place where they have a lot of pieces to come up to the first string, which I think we knew that with Maryland. Like, we knew they lost a lot of pieces. We knew that we didn't even know if their first string guys would be really good. I think Billy Edwards has played better this year than I expected. I think their defense has played better. I'm more impressed by the 24-0, which again, it's Villanova. You know, I'm so glad that those caveats are about
Villanova
to go away.
Is a good FCS team, but still, Villanova.
Yeah. But I think they did what they're supposed to do in the first half. So I think that tells me more about Maryland than the second half.
That was a good one, Philip.
That's a well-timed comment, Philip. Well done,
Philip. If you're listening on podcast, he said Villanova is really missing Jay Wright. In a lot of ways, they are.
Jay Wright is a Bucknell alum, which is where I do ministry. So he came and gave the commencement speech a couple, I think, 2 years ago. It was not a good speech, but
legendary football or football, what a legendary basketball coach. You can only do so much with your life, right?
To me,
Maryland is where they are. I didn't really give them any props in my power rankings just because, like, you scored 38 points. I'm glad Billy Edwards and Ty Felton had a good day, but I mean, that's what every game is, right? Billy Edwards and Ty Felton have a great day. Let's say congrats. It happened again. I don't see Maryland being a contender by any means in the Big Ten. If I'm going to be concerned about anything, it's the fact that, you know, yes, I have Ty Felton. Yes, I have Billy Edwards, but I need some other guys to step up. And Caden Prather, too. He's a very good wide receiver as well. But, you know, is Mike Locksley going to change things up? And is this team going to be consistent and play hard every single game? Because this season, guess what? I'm thinking we're probably going to see a really good game by Maryland against one of the big dogs, and they're probably going to lose to Northwestern or somebody. I don't even know if they have Northwestern on their schedule. But I know what's going to happen. They're going to lose to Indiana next week, and Indiana's going to go 5-0. So... there we go. All right, let's talk about this USC Michigan game, Zach. Well, I guess really fast. John Jacobs, he said, is Indiana going to beat Maryland next week? He's thinking about betting his children's tuition money. Zach,
don't do that.
Should he bet his children's tuition
money? No. Okay. Especially.
But you're predicting a win.
I don't know yet. I need to look at things.
Okay.
Most right. likely, back, I'm predicting a win.
Come back for the preview on Tuesday. We'll let you know if you should bet your children's tuition money. We're leaning no right now, but, you know.
I mean, I'm leaning no for the whole thing. Don't bet tuition money. What are you doing? Sorry, keep going.
I love it. All right, USC, Michigan. Michigan beats USC 27-24 in dramatic Big Ten opener, scoring the game-winning touchdown with just 37 seconds left. Khalil Mullins powered Michigan's victory, running in his second touchdown from 2 yards out on a fourth and goal play. Michigan initially led 14-0, but USC fought back and got the game to 24-20 in USC's favor. The fourth quarter on Miller Moss's third touchdown pass, a 24-yarder to Jacoby Lane. Mullins rushed for a career-high 159 yards, including a rush of 63 yards on the final drive of the game. Look, they had Michigan dead to rights. I mean, USC had Michigan dead. There was nothing they could do. They couldn't pass the ball. They couldn't do anything. And Khalil Mullins got loose. USC had him wrapped up. They had him wrapped up, and he still muscled, powered his way through. Zach, we'll talk about USC here in a minute, but Michigan squeaks by. Is this like only run the ball game? Is this sustainable? Yankee was in the chat last night. He was telling us this is sustainable. This is going to take them far, and they're going to have a good team this year. Is this sustainable? What's your thoughts?
No, it is not sustainable. People forget that the reason why that legend, a lot of Michigan fans see it as legendary against Penn State, the 32 straight runs. You want to know why they were able to do that? Because you had a quarterback who could actually throw over the top. And you had a much better offensive line. And you had a much deeper rotation in your defense. It's not sustainable. You need something out of the passing game. Because your margin for error just shrink. We see it with Iowa. Iowa just crushed Minnesota. But the reason why they lost to Iowa State is because when the running game got stopped, Iowa State could score. And they everything shut down at that point. You have to have a changeup. This is going to leave some indication of what I think about USC, but I'm just saying this does not bode well. Like, at least for them being in the upper echelon of the Big Ten.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think looking at it, it's a really, really nice story. It's like the Penn State story last year, right, where they just completely abandoned the pass in the second half and just went straight for the run, and it worked really well. I think, unfortunately, for Michigan, I'm not going to say they got lucky, because they definitely deserved, you know, the run, and they were tough and strong and did a great job. I don't think you can rely on getting up 14-0 every single game. I don't think you can rely on a 63-yard touchdown, or not a touchdown run, a 63-yard run to set you up on the final drive every single time. And I don't think you can rely on a Will Johnson interception pick six every single time. I mean, Will Johnson got hurt in that game. We'll see if he's back next week. Maybe that passing game gets better when Colson Loveland returns, but that passing game... Yeah. It needs to be something, because you did well against USC, and I think USC was blanked a little bit in the beginning, even though they knew Alex Orji was starting. That offense was still run differently, and I don't think they were expecting some of it. I don't know how you weren't expecting them to just run the ball. You've seen Alex Orji throw, but apparently it got him. But at the end of the day, like, Michigan, props to them on this win.
Yep.
But I think you have to develop some kind of passing game. Once Colson Loveland comes back, it'll be helpful. But you have to develop some kind of passing game. Otherwise, there's just going to be nine guys in the box every single time. And there are teams that tackle better than USC.
Yes. Yeah. So agreed.
All right. So, Zach, let's talk about USC for a second. What was USC's biggest deficiency in this game they must address? I can think of like two or three. What was the biggest one for you?
I think lines and tackling. Like, I think a lot of, and I've been saying it since the LSU game, that I thought they punched up against LSU. They outcoached LSU, but LSU was the better roster. And that bore out in this game. Like, US, and I think Lincoln Riley made a couple of questionable calls, but Lincoln Riley is coaching a team that has a talent deficiency on the lines and in defense. The defense reminds me actually a little bit of 2022 Ohio State, where you get Jim Knowles, you're so excited, and early on it looks like that things are fixed, and then you start to realize, oh, like, it's not just that people are learning the system, but there are probably guys in the wrong spots and maybe guys who aren't even not talented enough. I think USC is there, and I think they got a little lucky against LSU that Brian Kelly forgot he had running backs. And then against this game, Michigan's not going to forget that they have running backs, right?
No, they're not.
And then, I mean, the lines. I mean, Miller Moss is a dude. And, like, he hung in there, and he got hit hard. And, you know, he hung in there well. But neither line really held up well, I thought, against Michigan's line play. And only until, I think, the second half, Lincoln Riley both adjusted. And also, I think Michigan's defense started to get tired because the depth isn't there. But that's when they were able to start to find more rhythm in their offense.
Yeah, yeah. For me, the biggest thing was the offensive line, right? If Miller Moss just had more time, he would have been able to, I think, pick apart the secondary. And I'm not trying to say the secondary was bad, but Will Johnson did eventually lead this game. When you have only Makari Page back there, when he is your only... I shouldn't say their only good player. Amir Hall is decent. But when he is back there, when Will Johnson is not back there, I apologize, that secondary definitely has some holes. And it doesn't have the threat of the INT for a pick six like it normally does when Will Johnson is there. But that defensive line, I don't think USC has the worst offensive line in the world. Do I think it's okay? Yes. But that's what Michigan's defensive line will do to an okay offensive line. Mm-hmm. And that is what, in my mind, this is my takeaway. In my mind, as long as Michigan's defensive line is playing like that, you have a shot to beat any team.
Yep.
Any team. Not just in the Big Ten. If your defensive line is playing the way that Michigan's played in this game, you have a shot to beat any team in the nation. And for me, that's why my takeaway is that, like, one of my other takeaways is that Michigan, they are still among the elite in college football right now because they have an elite defensive line, and that is going to carry you far. Now, are you able to counter that? Sure. And teams that do counter that are going to be able to beat Michigan. But until that happens, I can't say that Michigan is not among the elite. And I know what people are going to say, it happened against Texas. I get that. Texas has one of the best offensive lines in all college football, and that proves that if you are able to have one of the best offensive lines, it's going to happen. But that's the thing. Nobody else out there, in my mind, has an offensive line like Texas right now. They might develop it. They might get better. But as long as that defensive line is playing the way they did against against USC, Michigan's still elite in my mind.
Yeah. Can you further define elite? Because that word makes me like, I'm like ready to say, I don't agree with you, but I'm also like curious, define that more.
A team that is elite in college football today can win a quarterfinal playoff game.
Okay. I think I can be on board with that then. Yeah. Cause
I'm not saying they're like a shoe-in to beat Georgia. or anything like that. But I think you get Michigan up against the Big 12 champ or the ACC champ in the playoffs, I think they have a good chance of winning that game.
Well, and to your point, I don't know if I like the matchup of Josiah Stewart lining up over Josh Fryer.
Yeah, that's not great.
No. Like, this D-line will give everybody remaining on their schedule problems, including Oregon and Ohio State.
Unless your running back strips the ball from the defensive tackle. In that case, you got a chance.
That was a heck of a play, by the way, by Woody Marks.
Man, what a play by him. It really does stink for USC that they lost, because that would have gone down in the record books as like, not record books, as like in the Hall of Fame books, as like one of the best plays in USC history.
Yeah.
Now, unfortunately, it's not like in a championship game or something like that, but just, I mean, I know how Ohio State fans feel about that Maurice Claret play when he took the ball away after the interception. Like, man, that would go down as just one of the craziest plays. So, So overall, I think USC deserves to be ranked right behind Michigan, because I think USC had that game. But I think Michigan just did the right things, and they played some better ball in certain areas that got them to be able to be where they were to win the game. And USC has to take a tumble for that. But at the same time, USC was on the road, so Michigan had the home environment. We'll see what happens, but that's what I got for now. So
yeah.
All right, let's get to Washington Northwestern, then we'll hit a break, and then I see people are asking about the Rutgers game. We're going to get to Rutgers after. Our order is down here, folks, so USC, Michigan is what we're all done with right now, so we're getting to Northwestern, Washington, and then Rutgers and the rest of them there. So hang with us. We're going to do Washington Northwestern really fast, hit a commercial, and then we'll get to Rutgers. Washington dominated Northwestern. Zach, 24-5. You got to love that the safety was in there, right?
Nothing says there. Big Ten like that. Welcome to the Big Ten, Washington.
Northwestern got a safety on you. But Washington, they did rebound from the Apple Cup loss. Will Rogers led the offense with two first-half touchdown passes to Denzel Boston, which, by the way, if you've not gotten a chance to watch Denzel Boston play, heck of a player. Wonderful wide receiver. Jonah Coleman, another heck of a player. Wonderful running back. He added eight-yard TD run in the fourth quarter, highlighted by a hurdle over one of the Northwestern defenders. Go check the highlights for that one. That was fantastic. Washington's defense, quite frankly, they were awesome. Now, I don't know how awesome you can be when Jack Lausch is the quarterback of the other team. He went 8-for-27 with 53 yards and two interceptions. So he got an F for me on the quarterback grades that I put out earlier today. Zach, let's start with the winners. Is Washington transitioning into a full Big Ten team now with that defense? Have they gone full Big Ten? They are getting rid of the Pac-12. It's long gone. They are a defensive team now. Have they gone full Big Ten yet?
I mean, there's so many ways I could take this. Because what do you mean by Big Ten? Is it like Iowa Big Ten?
Like defense, man. You know, playing good defense. You got a safety in the game, right? I mean,
to be fair, Northwestern got the safety.
Well, there was Washington. A safety in the game, though.
That's fair. I mean, yeah, I think so. Like, I think they're, you know, they're preparing more for power type teams. And I always bristle a little bit at that idea, because that's not worth going. That's a rabbit hole that I'm not going to go down.
We still got like five more games to get to. Four more games to get to. So.
I'll just say that I think yes. Like, I think Washington is a little better than I expected, and I think the defense is a part of it.
Yeah, the defense is definitely better than I expected. I expected Washington to have a good offense. Will Rogers coming in from Mississippi State, he's a good quarterback, and I was a little questioning the arm strength and some of that stuff, but he seems to do really well. I knew Denzel Boston would be a good wide receiver. I just wasn't sure how good. He's been fantastic. Josh Jackson has been fantastic. And then Jonah Coleman has been the running back that I thought he was, right? I mean, he had a fantastic year at Arizona, now coming into Washington here, adding on to that. And then you have this defense as well. It's just a shame that Washington lost to Washington State, because I think their public perception would be so much better. I think they would be close to being ranked right now if they had beaten that Washington State team. And I think that Jed Fish has nobody to look at other than himself in the mirror for that stupid play call that he made at the end of the game. Now, you could argue, should have put the game away sooner, but at the end of the day, that's the hand you were dealt, and you called a very stupid play at the end of the game. Yep. And that's why Washington is not getting as much recognition as I think they should, quite frankly. Yep. Is David Bronze, let's transition over to Northwestern for a second. Last episode, we had somebody say that David Braun was on a Disney magic run last year.
Is it shout out to running? Sonny Verna.
Yeah, shout out to Sonny. If you're listening, Sonny, take credit. Is his magic run running out, Zach?
I'm going to say no. But that's because I think we knew coming into the season that this schedule was going to be a lot harder than last year.
Yeah.
And so I would just say, I think anyone who thought, well, Northwestern's going to win 8 games again this year. I think if anyone thought that, it was kind of a pipe dream. And I think I shared last year, I think last year was right time, right place, right roster. And what he did a year ago deserves a lot of credit with all the transition, but now he's got to be in year two and he's been dealt a really tough schedule.
Yeah. It's definitely not the schedule we had last year. And that's no disrespect to the Big Ten West, but I definitely think the Big Ten West was a schedule that fit their identity of play better. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that, you know, the teams were much worse or anything like that. I just think that it fit their identity of play better. And unfortunately this year, I think that they have some teams on that schedule that are going to present new difficulties for them and be pretty difficult. Doug Shepard is asking, he said, did Braun keep all of his assistants from last season? No, I believe both coordinators changed, right, Zach?
Yeah. I know Zach Lujan came in from his former rival, South Dakota State.
Yeah.
I think that's actually part of it too, is that I think David Braun wisely understands that what he did a year ago isn't going to fit in the new Big Ten. And so he's trying to come up with his own style, his own identity, and that takes time, and he's doing it in a year with a much tougher schedule. So I don't think the magic has run out. I still think he's a dynamic coach, and just remember the way Northwestern has always been, even under Pat Fitzgerald, who is one of the best coaches of the past 20 years, like phenomenal coach. Yeah. But he would have these years where he would win 10 games and win a division title and then win 3 the next year. And it's because you can't stack talent at Northwestern like you do at other schools. They just have too many limitations.
Yeah, it's true. It's very true. All right, guys, we are going to hit a commercial really fast, and then we'll come back and we'll talk some Rutgers. Stay with us. The Big Ten Huddle is brought to you by the College Huddle, the largest fan-led college sports podcast community on the internet. With contributors from 70 different schools, you will get in all kinds of analysis from all over the country. Go visit thecollegehuddle.com to find your team and read articles from all across so many fans and contributors. The College Huddle is fan-made, fan-driven, and fan-fueled. Quick note, the College Huddle's editor is on vacation this week, so you won't get any articles this week. But check them out next week. Eric emailed me and was like, hey, don't send me any articles this week. I'm going to be in Missouri. I was like, oh, okay.
I'm going to send him so many articles and be like, why didn't you post them? No.
All right, Rutgers, Virginia Tech. Rutgers wins against Virginia Tech. Kind of edged it out, 26-20. It was funny. My app was malfunctioning. So when I looked at the score, it was 26-3, and I was like, wow, Rutgers really killed it. This was a game I watched after the fact, and I was like, oh, wait, no, my app just malfunctioned. It's 26-23. Thanks to Jai Patel's 24-yard field goal with 2 minutes left in the game, Rutgers built a 16-point lead but saw it vanish in the fourth quarter after two rushing touchdowns by Virginia Tech tied the game at 23. A 63-yard screen pass from Athan Kaliak-Manis. Great job, Athan, to Ian Strong set up Patel's game-winning kick. Virginia Tech's last attempt to respond ended with a key interception by Rutgers' Robert Longerbeam. That's a crazy name. Longerbeam. And Rutgers running back Kyle Manungai and Samuel Brown the fifth combined for 144 yards and 3 touchdowns, while Tootin led Virginia Tech with 122 rushing yards. Despite missing scoring chances, Rutgers notched its 10th consecutive non-conference win. Congratulations, Greg Schiano. Holy crap.
Big deal. Big deal.
Greg Schiano is such a fantastic coach. I cannot say enough great things about him. But Zach, I think we have to have a hard conversation here. Should Rutgers have won this game by more? They were up 16 points. The fourth quarter came. Virginia Tech makes a comeback. Now, give them credit. They did what they were supposed to do. They responded. Yeah. They got punched in the mouth. They responded right back. Ian Strong, heck of a screen, heck of a catch there on that screen pass. Take the ball and then to be able to kick the field goal. We give Rutgers all the credit in the world to respond like that. But felt like they probably should have won by more here. What were your thoughts, Zach?
Well, I actually went through the play-by-play and drive chart. And this is on the episode of my show that I'm posting tomorrow. And it should have been 41-7 before Virginia Tech's next touchdown. They missed two field goals. They fumbled at the 3-yard line. They got stopped on a 4th-and-1. They should have converted all those if they're, you know, if they want to be the team that they want to be. And the reality is they are not, this is going to sound like a backhanded compliment. They're not good enough to blow those opportunities. Like, they're good enough to beat teams when they play well, but they are lucky that they got out of this game with a win, and they've got to play better if they want to get beyond to what they have as their goals, which is 8, 9, maybe even 10 wins. Because they showed that they can be dominant. I mean, 26-7 with, or 23-7 with that many mistakes. I mean, in Lane Stadium, no less. And right, I think we're finding out Virginia Tech, maybe they're not as bad as we thought. Like Vandy, that loss to Vandy, you know, Vandy took Mizzou to the wire last night. Yesterday. So like, I don't know how good Virginia Tech is, but the reality is, I'm slow to give Rutgers props because I'm like, what it should have been, I'm like, yes, you're like at the same level as Indiana right now in terms of hype. But I'm a little nervous because I'm like, okay, if you do that again, you will lose. You can't do that again.
I was surprised that Greg Schiano trusted Patel to kick again, right?
Yes.
After the two missed field goals for him to go and ask him to kick again. I was kind of surprised. Now, I don't really think you had really another choice there. It was 4th-and-5 on Virginia Tech 7. So it's not really a great opportunity to go for it. So I shouldn't be that surprised. But still, like, after missing those two field goals before, you have to think that Greg Schiano had a little bit of a lump in his stomach. Like, oh my gosh, is he going to miss this one as well? It's just tough game for Rutgers.
Yeah.
And I agree with Sean. There were some coaching mistakes as well that need to be improved. They're excellent most of the time, but definitely in those moments, you have to get better. But I, like I said, from the beginning, I think you give credit to Rutgers.
Yeah.
They got punched in the mouth. They made mistakes and Virginia Tech responded. Virginia Tech did exactly what they were supposed to do. They saw an opportunity and they went for it and they took advantage of it.
Yeah.
However, Rutgers at the end of the day, they took care of business. They got the field goal. They got the interception at the end of the game, and they got out of there with a win in a hostile environment. Blacksburg is not an easy place to play. Like Sean says, first win in Blacksburg ever.
Yeah, that's. I wanted to point that out. Like, I think I don't. I sound very critical, but I think we do need to highlight they don't win. They have not won big road games in their history, and this is a huge road game of a former Big East rival. And so regardless of your thoughts about Virginia Tech, it's a big deal. It exercises kind of demons from their past. Like, I think there's just a lot of good about this win. And I think to Sean's point too, I think I was surprised how ineffective the running game was because of Virginia Tech's defensive line. And that Kaliak Manis, like, he averaged over 10 yards an attempt. Like, that bodes well for Rutgers. And I think if you had told me that Kaliak Manis averaged over 10.5 yards per attempt, I would have assumed that Rutgers blew out Virginia Tech. Mm-hmm. So like, I think there's a lot of good to build on here, but the coaching and the lack of execution really needs to be addressed. And you have to ask yourself, how can this offensive line continue to progress so that the running game can continue to be dominating?
Totally. I look at this and I say it really stinks for Rutgers that they had these areas that they were not as good in, right? I mean, Virginia Tech is not a good rush or running defense, and they held Kyle Manungai to almost 3 yards per carry, 3.2 yards per carry. That just shouldn't happen against a bad rush defense like Virginia Tech. However, it did happen, and you're right. Athan Kaliak-Manis, he responded. Ian Strong, he responded. Only three guys caught passes in this game. That's wild. Only three guys. Ian Strong, Dymir Miller, and Kenny Fletcher. I always thought it said carry. Yeah. No, it's Kenny Fletcher. I mean, so all these things go wrong for Rutgers, but then you have the guys who were not normally the guys you would rely on to win the game come out and say, nope, put it on my back. I'm going to make this happen. Yeah. And I love it. I love it for this program. And I love what it says about the culture of Rutgers and what Greg Schiano is building there.
Yep. Yeah. Resilience, perseverance.
Yep.
That really does.
And belief too. They believe in themselves. They believe in each other. I mean, a normal team that doesn't believe in themselves, like they would have got punched in the mouth and been like, oh, well, it's, you know, that sucks. But no, like they believe in themselves. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think, well, and it's funny. There's a side conversation going in the comments that, and I think you see it even in Sean's comments. It's like, we are Rutgers. We're not the State University of New Jersey. We're Rutgers. That's who we are. And I think in a sense that's, they believe that about themselves. Like, we are who we are. We're going to win. We're going to persevere. We're going to hit you in the mouth. And like, I they believe in themselves. And I think that, that longer beam interception, like, yeah, like it's not, that wasn't just a great play. It was a belief play that we are going to, we're going to finish this game.
I totally agree. And that's the thing too. The fans are starting to believe in it too. That's the big thing with a program like Indiana right now. I think Indiana's going through some similar stuff where the players are starting to believe. I don't know if the fans completely believe. Now, I know there's some fans who are really excited, but it's still not a great environment at those games. It's the opposite for Rutgers now. I mean, Rutgers, those fans believe they're showing up to games. They are rowdy, and they are all about their team, and they believe that it doesn't matter who it is that comes into their stadium. Now, again, this wasn't at their stadium, but I know next time they have a home game, those guys are going to be, those fans are going to be going crazy because they believe anybody that steps foot in that stadium, they can beat them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So. Cool stuff. Cool stuff. All right. We got to move on from Rutgers to UCLA. Zach, UCLA lost 34-17 to number 16, LSU. Don't ask me how they're number 16, but Ethan Garber's passed for 281 yards and two touchdowns, but committed two costly turnovers, a fumble, an interception. He had a very good first half. It was tied 17-17 at the first half. The Bruins scored early, tying the game, like I said, to 17-17, but they were shut out in the second half. LSU scored 17 more points, like I said, 34-17. And overall, UCLA played well in the first half. They did not play well in the second half. I mean, Zach, like many of us thought UCLA, they're just dead. They're dead and gone. Doesn't sound like things are going well in practice, but they come out against an LSU team who admittedly is overhyped. This LSU team is not as good as their ranking indicates. But they're overhyped. LSU or UCLA went into LSU Stadium, Death Valley. They were tied at halftime. I mean, can this UCLA team be good? Like, is there just something missing with this team? Is it coaching? What, like, is there something missing with this team? Can they actually be good, or are they just a stellar team in the Big Ten and nothing else?
I mean, I think this year they are going to be a stellar team at just by virtue of schedule, and we've talked about that ad nauseum. But I think the theme of this year for UCLA has to be progress. Progress with development, progress with coaching. And I think you never want to look at a loss as like a win. But this was a win for UCLA in terms of where they want to go by the end of the year, which is to be just a better football team. You know, they were completely outclassed by Indiana last week. And here they go to Death Valley, they go away from home, and they compete for a half, and then LSU's talent advantage takes over. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what you kind of expect from a team that's coached well but just doesn't have the talent. And I'm not saying Deshaun Foster has coached super well yet, but I think that is a good sign considering how young of a coach that Foster is.
I agree. I think that Foster took a job he wasn't ready for. And I think UCLA knows when they made this hire, like, Foster was still a few years away from really being ready for this job, and or even a head coaching job in general. We have two brand new coaches, first time ever head coaches in the Big Ten right now, in their first year. We have others as well, but in their first year, and Deshaun Foster and Sherrone Moore. Both of those guys are going to have growing pains, and both of those guys are going to be going through a lot. I think Deshaun Foster has a lot more to learn in his time because he's never even been a coordinator, right? He's been a position coach, but he's never even been a coordinator, and so he's going to have to learn. He's going to have to figure that stuff out. I see, you know, John's asking here, what's Deshaun Foster's buyout and what's Eric Bieniemy's buyout? I don't know what their buyout is, but I have to believe UCLA has to give them more time than 1 or 2 years, right? I mean, with the timing of Chip Kelly leaving, Foster being an alumni, like, I could see them getting rid of Eric Bieniemy or, like, encouraging him to leave or something like that if the relationship there isn't well between Foster. I mean, at one point, Foster said he's calling plays. I don't know what in the world is going on with that. You got Eric Bieniemy there. He should be the one calling plays. Yeah. I don't know if that's still going on or how that has happened, but at the end of the day, like, I think UCLA has good players. I think TJ Harden's a good running back. I think Ethan Garbers has the capability to be a good quarterback. And I think Rico Flores Jr. can be a good wide receiver. Yep. But I just think they need to all have that put together. And it's not happening right now. And that a lot of that is a product of Deshaun Foster. He got this job really late. And he's first year head coach.
And don't undersell that. I'm not saying you will, but I'm saying it to the fans. Like, that point is a big reason why there's all these struggles. Is it's not just that Deshaun Foster got the job. It's that he got the job the way he did, right? And, like, as much as I love that Chip Kelly's at Ohio State, Chip Kelly kind of screwed UC, not kind of, he really screwed over UCLA.
He fully screwed UCLA.
Yeah, like, we need to be honest about that. And UCLA fans are very honest about it. And they should be. Like, the way Chip Kelly left.
I will say, in fairness, like, there were rumors of them firing him, like, the year before.
Yeah, it's...
And so, like, yes, Chip Kelly. And this isn't me being an Ohio State fan. This is just me looking at the situation objectively. I couldn't care less about, you know, Chip Kelly and where he was at before and all that stuff. He's at Ohio State now, and that's fine. But, like, if I'm looking at this objectively, last year, you let information leak that Chip Kelly could be gone after the USC game. Like,
that's what in the world are we doing?
Like, how poorly run of an athletic department do you have if you're letting information leak like that, whether you wanted that out there or not? Like, first off, you shouldn't want that out there. Like, you're going to ruin everything with your coach. That's why Chip Kelly was looking for offensive coordinator jobs in the NFL, because he knew, I'm getting fired soon. And they don't believe in me, so I'm not going to win here if they don't believe in me. And so then he took a job at Ohio State as the offensive coordinator. So, like, yes, did Chip Kelly screw UCLA? Yes, he did. Did UCLA kind of screw Chip Kelly too? Yeah, there was –
It was not a good relationship.
No, it was not. And I think UCLA is better off now with somebody like Deshaun Foster that they – feel they have a good relationship with.
Yep.
Now, is Deshaun Foster going to be as good of a coach as Chip Kelly? Not right now. Could he be? Yeah. Chip Kelly had a hard time as a head coach. Had a hard time, you know, raising NIL money. Had a hard time recruiting. Had a hard time scouting. Stuff like that. Deshaun Foster, he's younger. He could excel in that stuff. So, we'll see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. Going to get to a commercial really fast, and then we will come back, and we'll do our last two games. Purdue in Oregon State, and then the heartbreaker of Michigan State, Boston College. Stay with us. Homefield is your go-to destination for premium collegiate apparel with a passion for comfort and a flair for vintage design. Homefield brings you gear that is comfortable and stylish. With over 150 colleges to choose from, Homefield digs deep into the archives, uncovering forgotten logos, iconic mascots, and legendary moments to create one-of-a-kind apparel. Use my code TBTH for 15% off for new customers, or use my link in the description. Back here on the Big Ten Huddle, talking Purdue, Oregon State. Oregon State wins 38-21 over Purdue. Jam Griffin rushed for 137 yards and a touchdown, leading Oregon State's strong ground game. Purdue struggled defensively, allowing 341 of Oregon State's 445 total yards on the ground. Nearly 350 yards they allowed on the ground. Card connected with tight end Max Clair for a 33-yard touchdown that cut the deficit to 14-17. That was good to see. However, McCoy led a drive that ended with a 29-yard field goal, and Purdue's defense continued to struggle as Oregon State scored another touchdown with a 26-yard sweep, extending the lead 24-7. There was really no looking back from there. The bright side for Purdue, Devin Mockabee rushed for 163 yards and a touchdown, but the Boilermakers couldn't recover from their early mistakes. I believe Mockabee also did have a fumble. That's something he needs to continue to try and clear up. Purdue must address these run defense issues as they head into Big Ten play. There are so many Big Ten teams that are excellent at running the ball. If they don't address these issues, Purdue might not win a game in the Big Ten, point blank. Yep. Zach, that's one of the big things. Is there anything else, or do you want to just comment on that needs to change and in a hurry for this Purdue team?
Yeah, well, I think run defense is at the top of the list. I think step two is fix everything else.
Well, yeah.
I think the biggest disappointment is Hudson Card. And I know he hasn't had time, but 57 yards passing.
Yeah.
He had a 33-yard touchdown pass to his tight end, which means he had six more completions for 24 yards.
Yikes.
I mean, that's, oh my gosh. I mean, that's abysmal. And everything is bad for Purdue right now. And they did not play a good team. Like, they played a average to below average Oregon State team, and they got worked.
I think some of it's the receivers. Purdue has had good receivers in the past. They lost Deion Burke. Burke or Burks?
This
past offseason, I think he's at Oklahoma now, which, you know, he didn't go to a much better passing situation there. Jackson Arnold, not been what they hoped for. Didn't he get benched? Did he get benched in that game?
I didn't watch that game.
Okay. I think he may have. Anyway, I just heard he's not been doing great. But yeah, definitely the rush defense needs to be better, and the pass rush needs to be better too. You didn't see it nearly as much against Notre Dame because Notre Dame didn't pass as much, and Oregon State passed some, but obviously they weren't doing as much as they were rushing the ball. But still, when they drop back to pass, virtually no pressure. Purdue has got to get things figured out with their defensive line. And this was a team last year that was able to get pressure on the quarterback. Kyren Jenkins and Nick Scroton last year. Scroton is down at Texas A&M now. Kyren Jenkins is still there. The linebacker, missing his name, Will Held, I think it is.
Mm.
He's had some good pressure on the quarterback this season, but not in this game. So yeah, there needs to be some more consistent good pressure there. And at the end of the day, this is my final takeaway of the night, Zach, and it pains me to say because I've been rooting for him hard. I don't think Ryan Walters is the guy for Purdue.
Yeah, I hate to
move on.
Yeah, I hate to say it this early. I wonder if it's just not the right fit. Like, I don't think he's. But I think you're right. He's
could
not
be the right fit. But taking over, and Sean's pointing it out, Brohm, right, taking over for Brohm. That is one heck of a turnaround.
Yeah.
With a team that doesn't have the recruiting success in the past to be able to turn around that fast, especially entering the Big Ten. Not they didn't enter the Big Ten, but this new Big Ten entering in and all that going on. That's wild.
Yeah. You need a guy at Purdue who's going to be an offensive innovator to kind of level the playing field, because you're not going to get the recruits there. It's going to be hard to get transfers there. That's not Ryan Walters. And I had high hopes for him this year. And
yeah, to me, it's kind of like Mississippi State, right? Mississippi State is never going to get the talent that other teams get down the SEC. They just don't recruit that way. But Purdue, they can get guys on their squad that are fast and good athletes, and they can scheme things up for them. So you get an offensive mind that is able to scheme guys into space, like we've seen Rondale Moore, Deion Burks. I mean, a number of guys that Jeff Brohm was able to do that with.
David Bell,
right? I mean, you get these guys who are just electric with how fast they are, and you put the ball in their hand, they can make some special things happen. I just don't think you have the size of guys available to you in recruiting, and I don't think you have the consistency in recruiting to be able to go get guys in Indiana to be able to run a defensive-minded Purdue team. At least not right now. Maybe things will change, but you got guys all around you that are doing that. You got Luke Fickell coming down to Ohio and getting those guys. You got Brett Bielema eating those guys up from Chicago. You got Sharon Moore. You got Jonathan Smith now, who's going to be going after those guys. Like, you have so many guys around you. Kirk Cignetti is coming in, and he's going to be a dynamic recruiter, I believe, and Notre Dame, too. Like, they are coming in. The leftovers for Purdue, you have to take high upside athletes and do something with them. I don't think you can build your team on the big nasties in the trenches, which stinks for Purdue, but until some things change there, I don't think they're going to be looking at Purdue nearly as much. So,
yeah, no, I think you're right.
Over under, I guess not over under. Do you think Ryan Walters will be fired by the end of this year? Do you think he has next year too? What do you think?
I mean, I look at the schedule. I don't know if there's a win left. Like, maybe Northwestern. And even that, I'm like, I think I'd pick Northwestern by, like, I might pick Northwestern by double digits in that game.
Well, it is at home against Northwestern.
I still might pick Northwestern by double digits.
Maybe, yeah. But yeah, that's about the only game on there. If you get some good turnovers against Michigan State, you have a chance there. They've been pretty loose with the ball.
Yeah.
Wisconsin, but that's at Camp Randall. I don't think you're going to be able to go into Camp Randall and get that win. So, yeah. John says, hire Drew Brees.
I don't know if I want Drew Brees coaching yet. He has no experience. But I appreciate
the
sentiment.
But just the optics of it, Zach. Come on. Just
they know they should get Drew Brees as athletic director.
Yeah.
That would be, yeah.
Sean says you need to give a coach 4 recruiting classes. If they fire Walters this year or next, you will never get a good coach. I see what you're saying there. I think the hard part is just how long do you put up with the bad coach? Like, at a certain point, you do see that this is just not working out.
Yeah.
And I think in the transfer portal era, that is only, you know, made things quicker. So I'm not necessarily disagreeing with you, Sean. I think you make a good point, but I think that if you have some promise, that is able to happen.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's been any promise for Purdue.
I think my counterpoint, and I appreciate what you're saying, Sean, my counterpoint, Scott Frost.
Yeah.
Because they gave him, I think, was it 4 years, 4.5 years? And they should have cut bait after 2020. Like, it was just so clear that it was not working.
Right. And I do think, like, oh, go ahead. Sorry, I thought you were done.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
I was going to say, like, I do think that, like, Sean makes a good point. Like, it's going to be harder to hire a coach when you don't give him the 4 years. But I also think that the more you allow them to run the program into the ground, the harder it still is to hire a coach. So it's almost like you pick your poison, right? Do I, you know, let them run the program into the ground and then it's harder to hire a head coach, or do I fire them early and then it's hard to hire a head coach because they think, oh, I could be out after 2 years there. It's a tough dilemma.
You got to weigh pros and cons, because I think that is it's a really good thought.
Sean points out Nebraska is a more attractive job option. So
yeah, that makes sense. That's fair. That's very fair.
It's an interesting conversation. I wish we had more time to talk about it, but we got to get to the Spartans. All right. Michigan State versus Boston College. Boston College won this one 23-19. I was heartbroken. However, it was the red bandana game, which honors Wells Crother, the players' sporting jerseys, reading for Wells, creating an emotional backdrop for the Eagles' victory. Just a cool thing to watch. I'm so glad I got a chance to watch this game and hear them talk about it and that kind of story and all that stuff. That was a cool experience. I can't imagine going to that game. That game would be really, really awesome to go to. But Boston College, they rallied late. Their quarterback, Castellano, throwing a 42-yard touchdown to Lewis Bond, clinching the game with just 88 seconds remaining. Bond had a standout game with 6 receptions for 102 yards, including the game winner. Aiden Childs led Michigan State with 241 passing yards, but he did throw 3 interceptions. In the first quarter, Michigan State initially held the lead, but faced a strong Boston College defense highlighted by Cal Halliday's forced fumble in the third quarter. Trayshawn Ward scored a 36-yard touchdown for Boston College, but Jonathan Kim responded with a 51-yard field goal to tie the game at 16. However, in the fourth quarter, Kim's 27-yard field goal gave MSU a brief lead before Boston College's final drive and the ensuing touchdown, as we previously talked about. Michigan State is now 3-1 and will need to regroup after a tough loss and find a way to address their turnover issues going against a very good team in Ohio State this weekend. Zach, Michigan State, they're starting to look like Nebraska from last year. Do you agree or disagree?
I think there's some nuance to it, but I think we kind of knew that for Michigan State to get where they want to get next year, they're going to have growing pains this year. And if you're asking if this team's going to have a lot of turnovers this year, here's the schedule the next few weeks. It's not going to be a very good one if you want to avoid turnovers. You've got Ohio State, at Oregon, Iowa, at Michigan, Indiana, at Illinois. They're going to turn the ball over a lot.
I agree. It's tough because Aiden Childs is just such a fantastic talent. And that's what I was trying to tell people when I graded him with a B on my pass, like on my quarterback grades earlier today. Cause I got a lot of people saying like, how in the world is he a B? Threw three picks and didn't even throw for 250 yards. Let's face it. That offense didn't go unless Aiden Childs went. So when you factor into that, that like the offense was completely on his shoulders and what it did, not to mention he had his two top wide receivers out of that game as well.
Yeah.
That offense was not doing anything if Aiden Childs was not being Aiden Childs. Now, unfortunately, being Aiden Childs also means you turn the ball over.
Yep.
Just what it is at this point. Can he correct it? Sure. It's not going to be him forever if he can correct it. But right now, being Aiden Childs is making big plays, throwing beautiful, beautiful balls that just sometimes get completed to the wrong team. So for me, like, Aiden Childs is going to have to do a lot of work figuring things out here. I like MSU in the trenches. I think that they have been very good in that aspect of the game. Cal Halliday, Jordan Turner have been wonderful linebackers for them. But it's just you're like watching this game, seeing Aiden Childs turn the ball over. Like I felt for the Michigan State defense as they walked onto the field again, being like, "Oh my gosh, we just got these guys off the field." Like,
yeah.
And now we're going back onto the field. And I have to think that's probably how the Nebraska defense felt a little bit last year.
Yeah. So. I think the one difference, and you kind of were touching on it here, Nebraska's turnover problem was because of bad quarterback talent. Like Jeff Sims is not a D1 quarterback. Heinrich Harburg is a backup at most schools. Like they didn't have a functional offense, and so they had to rely on their defense. I think what makes Michigan State scary is that Aiden Childs can play. He's just raw. And very I think raw. That is for people who don't understand, like that's the big difference between why there's still hope for Michigan State. Like I rattled off that schedule. There's still a real chance that Michigan State knocks off one or more of those teams because, and I think you saw it with him in this game, he can play hero ball and sometimes that sinks you and sometimes that gets you a win that you have no business getting. And he needs to learn how to play within the structure because that's going to end up getting to more wins if he learns how to do that and only take off when, you know, when he needs to and make the right read, go through his progressions. But the reality is he is not Nebraska's quarterback situation a year ago. This is a raw quarterback who needs to learn how to play within the structure and within the system.
Yeah. I mean, Rutgers last year, Jeff Sims was the greatest comparison. And the thing with Jeff Sims was he was raw, but he was also really old. right? Like, he started raw and stayed raw. he didn't really progress. In Georgia Tech, I mean, you know, they did some cool things with him, but when he found himself at Nebraska trying to run an offense that required a little bit more seasoning to his game, that was really, really difficult for him to do. I think that the biggest difference between him and Jeff Sims is that Aiden Childs has time. And he has time to work through some of this stuff, and he has time to get better. And I think that's what Jonathan Smith is seeing the most this season. It does stink for the seniors of Michigan State, but I think 2-3 years from now, when Aiden Childs is an older veteran quarterback, if he fixes these issues, watch out for Aiden Childs. He's going to be one of the best quarterbacks in the nation. The way he's able to throw that ball, the way that he has the playmaking ability that he does, it's just fantastic. And Sean's relating it to Gavin Wimsatt as well. Similar to Gavin Wimsatt, I would say. I don't know if Gavin had he did have playmaking ability, so I shouldn't say that. I think that Aiden Childs is more accurate than Gavin Wimsatt was. He just doesn't make the good decisions right now. But I think that's a good comparison there, Sean.
That's good.
All right, Zach, I think we put in an honest day's work here.
Yeah, I think so too.
Hour and a half in. And we're going to be done here, everybody. We appreciate you being here. I heard some people talking about previews for next week. Catch us on our preview show Tuesday, Zach and I. I forget what games I chose. I chose those earlier. I think Indiana, Maryland, I know is on there. Rutgers, Washington is on there for sure because they play Friday. So I want to get that preview out as quickly as we can. And then who else did I choose? I may have put Ohio State, Michigan State in there. Not sure. But I know those two games for sure. Indiana, Maryland, and Rutgers, Washington. We'll talk about those for sure. So, Zach, we'll tell people where they can find Big Ten Football Talk and your video releasing tomorrow.
Yeah. So Monday mornings, Thursday mornings, tune in tomorrow morning. It's the 200th episode of the Big Ten Football Talk podcast. So make sure you tune in, like, subscribe. It's a lot of recap. So, but I have some special shout outs. I think Sean, I think I got you in a shout out, for being just a loyal listener. So, really just appreciate it. I feel very blessed that I get to do this. So, and I feel very blessed to be on this show, once or twice, or sometimes even three times a week. So thanks for having me on.
You put up with my Indiana shirts and everything. So we got
once. This is the first time. Now it's probably going to be more often now.
Yeah, but you'll see more. Don't worry. Oh, you'll see more. Good. John is asking what time Tuesday. Same time, 9:00. The only one that ever really shifts is the power rankings one, because that's after the last game on Saturday nights. And this last Saturday night, we started early because of the Purdue Oregon State game. So catch us Sunday night, Tuesday night, Wednesday night. We do basketball at 9, Thursday night at 9, and then also Saturday night power rankings episode. You can catch us just right whenever that last game is over for the Big Ten games. So thanks everybody for watching. We appreciate it, and we'll see you next time. Have a good one.